You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It is a big day here in Los Angeles and all across California. Here's Secretary of State Alex Padilla speaking this morning in Orange County.
29 days till the election, and most importantly, the deadline in California law for counties to send vote-by-mail ballots. As you all know, this year we've chosen to send a vote-by-mail ballot to every active registered voter in the state of California, with some counties having gotten a head start mailing out as of last week. So we're live, folks. The election is underway.
Indeed it is. And if you're a registered voter in California, you may already have received your mail-in ballot. If not, it should be coming in the next few days. Doesn't mean you have to vote that way, by the way, but it is an option in a pandemic that still holds this nation in its grip. Look no further than the White House for that. In honor of the day, we've put together a panel to give us a snapshot of how things are looking right now in races and on important issues to you. So let's bring in a panel, Paul Mitchell, Vice President of Political Data Incorporated, former Democratic political consultant. Paul, welcome to you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet. Jan Perry, former member of the L.A. City Council, representing parts of downtown and South L.A. Jan Perry, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Fernando Guerra is professor of political science and director of the Center of the Study of Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount University. Fernando Guerra, thank you, professor.
Thanks for having me.
So, Paul, I'm going to start with you. You are the numbers guy, right? And I guess I want to get sort of an expectation here for turnout in Southern California in this election. Do you have any idea of how many people are energized to vote?
Yeah, I think we have, enthusiasm through the roof in this coming election cycle. The turnout, the actual turnout, will be defined by probably two different parts of this. One is that energy, that enthusiasm, kind of the organic sense of like, hey, we're all going to vote this election cycle. And pollsters are telling us that those numbers are through the roof. And the second piece is the mechanics of the election and how that's changing. For the first time in LA County, all voters are going to be mailed a ballot. They did this in Orange County and in parts of LA in the primary. They've done it in other counties around the state. And we expect that to add some additional voters to the final turnout. But we're probably looking at record turnout in terms of percentage vote. We're also definitely looking at record turnout in terms of total voters that have ever cast a ballot in an election in California. When you consider the fact that we're at 21.5 million registered voters right now, that's a record. And having close to 80% turnout would put us at the largest election the state's ever administered.
Did you say 80% turnout?
In a presidential election cycle here in California, we have pretty much universal voting. We have turnout that is extremely high. And the shame is obviously that we have a lot lower turnout in the gubernatorial election cycles and primaries and other races like that.
What do you make, Paul, of the claims that because mail-in ballots are going out automatically, if you're a registered voter, that somehow some kind of chicanery will happen, that this is all some sort of scam?
Well, we definitely haven't found that. And in fact, when you look at LA County, this last election cycle, just the primary we had, 70% of voters in LA County were mailed a ballot. And we didn't have claims of chicanery. And that's pretty universal.
Jan Perry, when it comes to turnout, what are you seeing in South LA? Are you expecting a big turnout? People going to the polls or people just filling out those mail-in ballots?
Well, in South Los Angeles, in the area that I represented for 12 years, there were already precincts that were 100% vote by mail, and that tended to benefit people who were elderly or somewhat housebound or people who were younger and working and busy and had kids and just didn't always make time to go to the polls. So this opens up an opportunity for them. And as a previous speaker indicated, you know, even if you get your ballot at home, you can still elect to take it in to a polling place and turn it in person. But what it does is it gives you a chance to sit down calmly, go through the ballot, figure out your preferences, and mark them before you go in. And you can also go in and drop them in a ballot box throughout people's neighborhoods. But I think I would say to people now, don't wait till the last minute. so we don't have a fiasco like we did in March the 3rd with lines.
You study all of L.A., Fernando Guerra, but you also look particularly closely at the Latino community. I know, you know, here in L.A., it tends to vote more Democratic. There are certainly plenty of Latinx people in Los Angeles who vote Republican or who may be independents as well. Do you see any interesting trends right now in Southern California's Latino voters?
Well, I think number one, to pick up on what Paul was saying, you're going to have record turnout from the Latino community in L.A. County, California, and the nation. More Latinos will vote than ever before, and they will probably surpass the number of African-American voters nationwide. And so you've seen a tremendous mobilization. Yes, here in California, overwhelmingly Democratic. They'll vote for Biden, and then things change, and depending on the different states, obviously a much more equal type of a vote in Florida, more Democratic in Texas and Arizona, but not as Democratic as California. It really depends on the local history, the actual national origins of the Latino population. But, you know, every single indicator is record turnout by Latinos throughout the country, certainly in absolute numbers. California makes it easier than any other state in that I know that the deadline for registration is coming up very soon. But even if you miss that deadline, you can still go to a vote center the day of the election and register on that day and actually submit a provisional ballot. So it's never too late in California until November 4th when the election's over.
Jan Perry, let's talk a little bit about specific races. The race for L.A. County District Attorney is a big one. Jackie Lacey, the incumbent, she's the first woman to serve in that role, the first African-American. She's from L.A. The challenger, George Gascon, was born in Havana, but also grew up in Los Angeles, serving as assistant police chief at LAPD. He was also DA in San Francisco. Let's talk about that race. Because it's garnering some national attention. Jackie Lacey is Black, but she's been criticized by a lot of folks in LA's Black community for refusing to prosecute police officers that have used deadly force. Gascon is seen as more liberal, more progressive. I know yesterday Mayor Eric Garcetti said he's switching his endorsement from Jackie Lacey to Gascon. What are you hearing about people's attitude to the candidates in this race?
You know, I'm hearing a lot of...
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot. And I knew George when he was a deputy chief working under, I believe it was Bill Bratton. Haven't worked as closely with Jackie. But what I do hear, you know, from the community are the same things that you're hearing. But I think it's more of the perception of progressive political agenda or lack thereof. I mean, she's always enjoyed very heavy support from the law enforcement or public safety law enforcement community, and George's background while he came up through the ranks as a police officer. You know, he's been in Arizona, went up to San Francisco, and he's evolved. So I think it's going to be a very, very tough, very polarized race and a lot of anger associated with it.
Professor Guerra, there obviously is a big race in the DA's race. How do you see it stacking up? Are you surprised to hear the mayor switching his endorsement?
No, I'm not surprised at all. Just the momentum is totally with the challenger, Gascon. I think it's going to be very, very close. You know, these are two Democrats. You can almost call them progressives. But the issue here is about criminal justice reform. And many of the progressives believe that Jackie Lacey has, while she indicates that she's part of that agenda, she hasn't moved strong enough from their perspective. This is the most important local election in the entire country in 2020, given the size of the DA. It will determine whether criminal justice reform will continue the momentum or not. It's also kind of interesting in 2008 when President Obama was elected, we talked about post-racial politics, and I never believed that. But here what we're seeing is post-racial candidacies in that you have an African-American woman who is not being supported by the progressive African-American community. You have a Latino male. And so most African-Americans will probably vote for Gascon instead of the African-American female. Very unusual in LA politics, especially for a countywide election.
Paul Mitchell, coming back to you. I know 2018, the midterm elections, there was a lot of talk about the House races, seven of them, in districts held by Republicans but won by Hillary Clinton. in 2016, just 2 years prior. I want to talk about those seats. And exactly, so they switched from Republican to Democrat. Are they in jeopardy of switching back? What kind of demographics do we have in those seats, in District 25 and 39 and 48?
Yeah, I think to think about those this year, it's best to start by thinking about those 2018 races as we were going into those races, into that election cycle. 2018 was a gubernatorial election cycle. Like I mentioned earlier, traditionally those are lower turnout elections. When you have a lower turnout election, it's not like all groups reduce their voter turnout equally. It means that you have a lot lower turnout for young people, a lot lower turnout for renters, a lot more lower turnout for Latinos and more progressive voters. So going into 2018, there were a lot of us that thought, there's no way that Democrats can sweep all these districts, just because we knew the impacts of that lower turnout. It was really striking that even though we had a relatively low turnout election, we still saw those seats flip. So now going into 2020, what we're expecting is an electorate in the 2020 election cycle that will be much more heavily Latino, much more heavily young people, millennials, much more heavily those renters and students. And so the environment is one where a Republican challenger to these races, or even the one seat that already flipped, where Mike Garcia won the 25th Congressional District in a special election, low turnout special election, you've got to think that the numbers in a presidential election cycle aren't as beneficial to those Republican candidates as they would have been in the gubernatorial cycle in 2018.
Mike Garcia, the incumbent, as it were, facing Christy Smith, who was in that race earlier this year, that special election race that you mentioned. The Cook Political Report, I think, saying it's leaning Republican. But again, you're saying that the Republicans are swimming upstream. I mentioned District 39 as well. This is a rematch between Gil Cisneros, who won the vacant seats left by Ed Royce back in 2018. His challenger is Young Kim, and they had a very close race as well. What are you seeing there?
Well, it's interesting. You have a race like that where there's this joke that the most vulnerable animal in all nature is a first-term member of Congress, because they have to run for re-election. They might have a very limited record. And so Gil Cisneros and these other candidates are definitely facing these challenges of trying to run in this environment. Now, there's also instances where, like Harley Ruta, which is another Republican incumbent, now Democrat in Orange County, his election victory was probably largely attributable to the fact that he was running against Dana Rohrabacher, who was had really high negatives. And so now in a new election against a candidate that isn't an incumbent, you might have different dynamics. But again, in all these instances, the numbers mean that the Republicans are going to have to work a lot harder. The Republicans are going to have to raise a lot of money and, you know, really just run more effective campaigns in order to win those races.
Jan Perry, Mark Ridley Thomas is termed out of his seat on the Board of Supervisors, so he's running for city council. He's in a runoff on the seat that represents District 10. He also has aspirations to run for mayor, perhaps, in a couple of years. How's his political future, do you think?
Unclear. He has a challenger, and she is highly energetic and very tied in at a grassroots level. It's the second time she's run, and her numbers went up this time, and she was able to put him into a
runoff. Give the challenger's name, if you wouldn't mind.
Her name is Grace Yu. That's Y-O-O, Grace Yu. She's a lawyer, longtime resident of the 10th District, and her only aspiration is to stay in the office and be a good council person. You know, the problem with term limits is that it's created this seat hopping. And of course, Mr. Ridley Thomas had the right to come back and run one more term in city council under the term limits in its last iteration. But what most council districts need is somebody who has a deep commitment to stay there and to make sure that funding is in place to build projects and to build housing. And, you know, if you want to run for a council person and for mayor, I believe you'd have to file for mayor before the end of the year to start raising money for mayor, which I think would probably take your eyes off of being a council person.
Well, you know who else has aspirations to be mayor is Kevin De Leon, who is about to take over the seat, being vacated by Jose Huizar, who's facing this, you know, a whole slew of federal corruption charges. And Professor Garrow, I want to get back to you. How do you see a possible fight in 2022 between De Leon and Mark Ridley Thomas for mayor? Do you think that's what this is setting up as?
Oh, absolutely. And there'll be all kinds of other individuals who will be running, including Mike Fuhrer, who's a city attorney. From my perspective, I know it's already difficult to project, you know, 2 years from now, but I could tell you that I strongly believe that Mike Fuhrer will probably make the runoff. And the question becomes, who's going to be that second person, whether it's De Leon, Mark Ridley Thomas, Joe Buscaino, all kinds of other individuals, and that would make the runoff. You know, I know that there's this conventional wisdom that someone holds an office, they shouldn't aspire to another one. In my polling, where I've tested that, voters are not against that. I know people say that, but overwhelmingly, when I've asked, is it okay for Eric Garcetti to run for president, over 67% of the people said yes, they would like it. It projects power. It makes an incumbent council member more powerful if he's thinking about running for mayor. It makes a mayor more powerful if he thinks they're running for governor. You are automatically a candidate for governor as mayor. And if you don't project that, that's weakness. And people pick up on that. So it's only some analysts who talk about, oh, they shouldn't do that. Nothing could be further from the truth. The history shows that it works. Voters are okay with it, overwhelmingly. And so Mark Ridley Thomas and Kevin De Leon should run, because it actually helps their district if people think they might be mayor. And they will be very powerful candidates, and it's going to be a very interesting race.
We have a lot to cover, obviously. You can find more election information at our website, KCRW.com/election. I want to thank all three of you. Fernando Guerra, professor of political science, director of the Center of the Study of Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount. Jan Perry, former city council member representing parts of downtown and South LA. Paul Mitchell, vice president of Political Data Incorporated. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. And now to Orange County. At the recent presidential debates, President Trump warned audiences of voter fraud on Election Day.
I'm urging my supporters to go into the polls and watch very carefully, because that's what has to happen. I am urging them to do it.
To watch that voters won't cheat is what he's saying, of course. To threaten the integrity of the election. That's the claim. Gustavo Arellano wrote in his recent LA Times column that this allegation of a sham at the polls is a page straight out of a very old playbook, the 1988 election in the OC. And he's here to tell us more about it for this week's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So tell us what happened in 1988. This was the election of 88 on November 8th.
So on the morning of November 8th, you start getting all these phone calls from across Orange County, or specifically in the city of Santa Ana, like, hey, there's these police officers or security guards or just thugs outside voting precincts in heavily Latino districts, holding up signs that saying non-citizens cannot vote, or asking people for their ID. And the assistant U.S. general at the time, Tom Umberg, who's now a state senator, he remembers saying like, oh, this can't possibly be true. This must be electoral, you know, like crank calls, for lack of a better term. Then he sends out the FBI, and it turns out actually it's 100% correct. So this was done at the behest of the Orange County Republican Party to influence the election, the assembly election of one Kurt Pringle, who ended up winning by less than 1,000 votes in that 1988 election.
Was this all across this district, or was it just in particular places, like hand-picked places?
So the district itself, it's now, I mean, it's not the same district anymore because, you know, they switch every couple of years. But this one was basically all of Santana. And there was in 20 different places. And we're talking about places like a Catholic church, a Boys and Girls Club, a senior citizen center, places that hold significance to Latinos, Santa Ana High School, for that matter. And Tom Umberg himself, he went and he saw from a distance Latino voters approaching these polls, seeing these signs or seeing these people. And these are uniformed security guards and then turning away. I mean, when it happened, it was a complete outrage. Any decent person was outraged, which, of course, in the Republican Party in Orange County, there's very few decent people, at least in the leadership. The leadership, the then chair at the time, Tom Fuentes, called it an honorable thing to do. But at the same time, you actually had Latino Republicans in Orange County. Some people described it as Nazism. These are Republicans themselves saying that about their own party.
So where did this plan, I mean, this was a well-constructed plan from the top of the county Republican Party. Who came up with this? Like, how did this come about? They were so concerned that they were going to lose the election that they wanted to make sure that they intimidated enough people to not vote.
Well, the official explanation that these party leaders said at the end from Tom Fuentes onward was, no one ever took full responsibility for it, of course, because once they got, you know, once you have your hand caught in the cookie jar, you're going to say, hey, it's the other hand who tried to take that those cookies. So what they said, though, was that they had been hearing rumors, kind of like what's going on with this election. They're hearing rumors that there's going to be unregistered voters, in this case, undocumented immigrants. And even the rumor of busloads of undocumented immigrants are going to be dumped off at polls to be able to vote.
Let's make it clear that there can be an accusation, I guess, that of busloads of people being dropped off. But you can't vote if you're not in the voter rolls, right? You can't vote if you're not a citizen of the United States. And people know that.
Well, of course, everyone does. But it doesn't matter for the Republican Party. In their mind, it's, hey, I know they didn't have these poll guards in, let's say, Newport Beach or in Corona del Mar. They did it specifically at Latino areas because they knew what that effect was going to have. And there was a case, a very famous police officer, Jose Vargas, who came to this country undocumented and was a presence in Santa Ana and Anaheim for decades. He told the reporters at the time that he showed up. He's an American citizen at this point and a police officer. He shows up, he sees these poll watchers, and he's like, oh, I'm scared. This is the type of stuff that they try to pull in Mexico. I'm not going to vote. But instead, he went home and he got his own badge just to show these people, hey, you're not going to be intimidating me and you're not going to be intimidating other people as well.
Did it work? Was that what helped Pringle to win?
Oh, yeah. Come on. When it's less than 1,000 voters in a super tight race in a very Latino district and you're seeing these story, you know, these cases of people leaving, of course it worked. And it's weird because at the end, there was never any criminal charges filed, even though the state, the, you know, OCDA, the FBI, the feds, they investigated it. Although very tellingly in 1989, so the year after this happened, then Governor George Duke Majan, a Republican and a conservative Republican at that, he signed into law a bill that outlawed uniformed security guards being within 100 feet of any of any poll. So this is something that, again, back then was seen as an outrage. The Republican Party did end up having to pay about $500,000 in fines, but it sure didn't kill the career of Kurt Pringle. He ended up becoming the last Republican Speaker of the Assembly. So Kurt Pringle ended up sitting pretty after all this, despite all the outrage.
Are there lessons or takeaways, Gustavo, that, you know, I mean, that we look at today about what happened way back when, 32 years ago?
Just that you have to be as vigilant as possible with any insinuation of voter intimidation, any attempt by politicians. And by the way, in Orange County, this is something that happens every couple of years where the Republican Party threatens to have these poll watchers. And now, poll watchers, by the way, are completely legal, but they have to go through a legal process. If me as a voter, I decide to go to my voting precinct and just hang around and see people vote, well, that's not legal and they should be kicked out. No matter what your party affiliation is. But also, especially, you know, in California, where you have a Secretary of State, Alex Padilla, who was actually here in Orange County today, you know, expressing his faith in the voting process, the authorities, they're going to make sure that voting does not get tampered with, especially in this election. So unfortunately, when you hear a president wishing for something that was successful in Orange County 32 years ago, well, you have to be vigilant about it. And I think the most vigilant way to get at that is by voting and telling everyone to vote.
Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times, and of course with us every week for KCRW's Orange County Line. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's all the time that we have for this evening. By the way, if you have election questions, you will get answers at kcrw.com/election2020. Again, that's kcrw.com/election2020. There's a field there. You can ask your question, and we will get you information via email or perhaps even on the air, but we will try and get you answers to those questions at our website. Tomorrow on this program, preschools. Many have stayed open. They are considered essential, but a lot of parents have been keeping their kids at home, so many of those preschools are struggling these days. We're online at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Tell us how you're doing. Join discerning Angelenos of all ages and stripes who are getting their Greater LA by podcast. And you can listen anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Mario Diaz, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Christine Camito, Amy Ta, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordahl all made this show happen. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and time. Have a good night.